Live on News Talk Radio News 91.9, it's McClain in the Morning. Now, here's Tyler McClain.
Welcome back, 35 minutes after 9 o'clock. Maybe when you're thinking about your career and your progression, you know, everybody wants to get to the top, right, in your various respective fields. And it doesn't matter if you work at a grocery store and you start out stocking the shelves, you know, eventually you wouldn't mind being the supervisor one day. Or maybe you work for a large multinational corporation and you started in the mailroom and suddenly you're the CEO. I don't know. There's a whole bunch of different examples, but we all aspire to something. But, you know, what happens when you get to the top? Will you really know what to do? Will it stress you out? Will it eat away at you? Do you have a vision about maybe what being, you know, a particular kind of leader is, and where do you draw that inspiration? Well, maybe the best way is just to draw inspiration from yourself and be mindful. I'm talking about Mindful Leadership, which is a new book. The subtitle, 9 Ways to Awareness, Transforming Yourself and Inspiring Others. Maria Gonzalez is the founder and president of something called Argonauta Strategic Alliances Consulting and is the author of the book. She joins us on McClain in the Morning. Hi, Maria. Good to talk to you.
Nice to speak with you, Tyler.
Yeah. Where does this come from for you? Because you do a lot of work with people about these kinds of things.
Where does it come from?
Yeah.
You know, it really comes from observation and having seen people over the last 30 years and realizing that it really does make a difference whether you are a mindful leader or not. It makes a difference in terms of how other people respond, how successful you are organizationally, and it does it quite simply because it focuses on the person, it focuses on the present moment, and it actually inspires people to become better than they ever thought they could be.
And I think a lot of people, and that's why I brought up sort of career progression off the top, because you can work for a company, let's say, or any sort of outfit, and go through it, and nobody can really notice you, but you could be promoted. And let's say someday you do become the one in charge. Well, at the end of the day, you still have to deal with people. And if you're not really skilled with that, you're going to have a lot of problems.
Tyler, you're absolutely right. What you said was exactly the dilemma that most leaders will face. And that is they truly don't know themselves. And if they don't know themselves, they certainly have no idea how they can relate effectively with others.
And that's the thing. How do you, I'm not saying be autocratic, but how do you dictate, you know, the pace and progression of a day amongst a team of workers and to get something done if you can't even maybe manage your own life or whether it's behind the scenes or at work, or you don't have that experience, you know, delegating tasks to people? A lot of people, it's not that they're bad at it. It's just they don't know that they're good. It almost seems like they have a fear of telling other people what to do in case something bad happens.
Well, you know, that's absolutely right. One of the greatest fears that leaders have is that they will make poor decisions. And one of the things that mindfulness does is it creates clarity of mind. And when you experience clarity of mind, then your judgment is absolutely spot on. You know when you know what the next move shall be. But more importantly, you also know what you don't know. You realize that there are many things you don't know, and you know how to surround yourself with people that may know more than you do, which very often is something that threatens leaders.
Yeah, and a lot of times people judge someone who's in charge by whether or not they're good decision makers, or I guess actively to say it, they're decisive. You know, they make decisions quickly, they don't fret about the consequences, and if something does come up and it's because of that decision, you know, they have a way around that and it doesn't stress them out. How does somebody get to be that kind of person? Because I think, you know, in our careers, and even if someone's listening and they are the boss, you know, they want to know how to be that guy or that be that woman.
You know, the first thing that it all starts with self-awareness, really knowing yourself. You need to be able to understand what makes you tick. You need to be able to see the kind of responses that you have under different circumstances, particularly under stress. You know, Tyler, you mentioned previously in terms of how stressful it is to get to the top and what do you do when you're there. Well, the reality is that those leaders that perform at the top level are those that are really aware of themselves. But there are actually 9 particular components that comprise a mindful leader. And it's important to note that this is not a game of perfect. It doesn't mean that you're absolutely at the top of your game in all 9 of them at any given moment, but you certainly exhibit a good number of them. And they are to be present, to be aware, to be calm, to be focused, to be clear, to be equanimous, which is really just going with the flow, to be positive, to be compassionate, and to be impeccable. And when we see leaders that actually exhibit those qualities, then we know we're actually looking at something outstanding.
What's interesting here, too, is that a lot of those that you bring up, if we go back to that list, a lot of them have to do with just sort of concentration and just sort of tuning out the chatter. How do I even get to that point? Because a lot of people can't even put themselves in a frame of mind to think that way.
You know, that's a very astute question and point, simply because the average person cannot concentrate, and it does not matter what level they're at in terms of level of an organization. The reality is that when we look at technology, when we look at our pace of life, when we look at the way in which we lead our lives, what happens is we drive out focus. And the more we drive out focus, the less able we are to concentrate. What mindfulness is about, it actually uses ancient techniques that help train the mind. Literally, that's all you're doing. You're training the mind to be in the present moment. And as you're doing that, you're actually rewiring the brain. And there have been lots of studies to indicate that. We have Harvard Medical School has been doing this for more than 15 years. In fact, in May, I was part of a study at the Harvard Medical School that was testing individuals that had more than 10,000 hours of meditation experience, and they were looking at our brains and comparing that to someone who has just started meditating and seeing what are the differences in brain activity when you work with techniques, particularly techniques that help you become calm. And we know there are significant differences, and it really is not that difficult. All it requires is a commitment to practice and train every day for at least a few minutes.
Yeah, I think of an example. This is kind of strange, but tell me, if maybe you've heard of Phil Jackson, who's been the coach of the Chicago Bulls and also the L.A. Lakers. Right. Guy's got more championship rings than I'll ever see of rings of any kind in my life, let's put it that way. But right. You know, everybody attributes his success to how calm he is. You watch the guy during press conferences. You watch some coaches just crack under pressure, you know, in a post-game press conference, and you know they get derisive, they get upset. They yell at the media. Phil's cool. He just hangs back and does his own thing. And you know, now he's retired and he's just taking it easy. But you know, here's a guy who had a great career. And a lot of people say they attribute that to how sort of he moved around behind the scenes, because he was a very zen guy. He had this Wu way of thinking, I guess, where he was just so relaxed and he could channel it and figure out what a priority was, even when he was working with the entire team or just with a player one-on-one. He just got through to people.
Well, Tyler, you're absolutely right. In fact, I mentioned Phil Jackson in Mindful Leadership for, you know, the reasons that you've described. He is a devoted Zen practitioner, so he practices the techniques of Zen. And we see the results. I mean, you know, it's very hard to argue with that kind of success.
Well, yeah, I'm not going to argue with it because I watched it on TV for years. I'm like, how does this guy keep winning? It doesn't matter what kind of team he gets, but he had great players. But, you know, it almost seemed too easy for him. But that's a great example. But, you know, a lot of people look at him and say, you know, or anybody like him and say, I guess a lot of what happens in my success in a current workday, it might come down to maybe what I'm doing, you know, in my downtime. And how do I manage my mind when I'm not at work?
You know, it's a matter of training the mind. And if you go back to Phil Jackson, which is such an excellent example, what you were witnessing that was almost surreal was what I call in one of the nine ways equanimity. And equanimity refers to that ability to go with the flow, meaning that you don't resist what's arising in the moment, but look for opportunities within the moment. And that is all trainable. You know, in terms of one's leisure time, as you're saying, when you practice mindfulness, it bleeds into everything that you do. It impacts what you do in your leisure time. It impacts how you do it in your work life. It impacts every moment of your life.
Yeah, one guy who wrote a lot about this, I'm not sure if you touched on it too much, is Bruce Lee. Has a lot of writings about just living in that kind of way and that self, always being self-aware, and that's paramount over everything. And almost just the way he could control a room just to walk in, it, not because people feared him because of his martial arts prowess, because, you know, just how he was as a person, he would almost just swashbuckle across the room. Nothing bothered this guy.
Well, you're absolutely right, and you're describing the exact same qualities that Phil Jackson has. Essentially, you know, with martial arts, you're trained in the same thing. You train in the present moment. You train to be absolutely serene with what is going on in this moment. And as you do that, everything seems to move in slow motion, and you're able to capture that moment and do what it is that needs to be done in that moment. But, you know, what I would say is that when we talk about these things and people listen, they sort of think, yeah, that's fine, but how do I do that myself? And the reality is that it's all trainable.
And how many people, and this is what I think, is have we lost something where, you know, we used to have the ability to concentrate, and I think we still do, but it's just not something that we channel enough.
You know, that's a very important point. And the question there really is, what is it that we've done to ourselves, as you say? And I think one of the key contributors is multitasking. We tout that as a quality, and in fact, the research tells us that it is impossible to multitask effectively. And some very recent research from Stanford University, in fact, found they were shocked to find that those individuals with who multitask the most were actually the worst at it. In fact, the most incompetent. What that means, now people will be listening and saying, well, that's very nice, but I can't afford not to be working on multiple things. And the reality is that multitasking, is the way people describe it, is that they actually work on many things at the same time. That is physically impossible. The brain is not wired to do that. However, one can be completely mindful and focus on one thing at a time, and you could be working on 6-8 projects in a day, but in a given moment when you're focused on something, you are exclusively focused on that thing. There's something that might be of interest to you, and that is the Center for Creative Leadership in the U.S. did a very interesting study that said that the average worker is interrupted every 11 minutes, which is not surprising. Most people will say that they're interrupted more than that. However, what is striking is that it takes the average worker more than 25 minutes to come back to the original task.
Well, that happened to me. I've had a bunch of different jobs in my life, but some of them are, you know, where you have to deal with people more than others. But certainly, you're right. When people sort of come into your workspace and you're trying to be hard at work, or the worst is when you're just starting your day, because mm-hmm. then you never feel like you're getting down to business. But you know, or a shift change where you're kind of in the middle of it, but it's not your time to go home. And
right.
people are coming in and saying hi and goodbye. That's the biggest distraction ever. I don't know how sometimes I was able to get my work done in some of the jobs I've had, just because, you know, people want to talk to you. And it's not always work-related, but even when it is work-related, it's still a hindrance.
Well, Tyler, I think that you probably have good concentration, and because the only way you could come back and get things done is by actually being able to focus. Two things. One is to be able to focus and to be calm. And so what happens very often is when we're interrupted, we get agitated. And when we get agitated, we're less able to be present, which makes us even less effective. And we waste even more time. But, you know, there's something I would mention, and that is we talk a lot about mindful leadership and sort of think of it in the context of those people that have formal leadership positions. And one of the things I talk about in the book, mindful leadership, is to say really that the definition of a leader needs to be redefined. And I define a mindful leader as anyone, as a leader, in fact, anyone who's in a position to influence another person. And I'd venture to say there, we don't know anybody who is not in that position.
Yeah, especially, you know, parents, you know, obviously would know, but, you know, sometimes in the course of their life too, and just working, and you come home, and let's say you're the bottom of the barrel at work, well, you come home, you're still mom and dad to somebody.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, and interestingly enough, sometimes you can look at your child and see a leader. You know, when we sort of say, you know, wisdom from the mouth of babes, sometimes that's what we're witnessing. We're witnessing someone who has had the opportunity to influence another person and has. And it doesn't matter what the age is. It doesn't matter what your experience. It doesn't matter. None of those things matter. It just matters that you actually took a moment and positively influence someone else's life.
Yeah, and I guess I wanted to finish with this. You know, there's always those people, and we grew up with them in school, that they're quiet, they sort of take the back seat. Not that they're followers, but they don't actually try to exude those leadership qualities. But much later in life, they might be the people that are actually heading up something, and they have to be a leader. And you know, how do they sort of cultivate that?
Well, you know, it goes back to how we started the conversation, and that is, it really is about self-awareness. And as you become more and more self-aware, it is a transformational process. And essentially, we know that people listen much more to what they see than what they hear. And what I mean by that is that just the witnessing of a role model. And so if you're able to cultivate that within yourself, that ability to be present, to know yourself, to be calm, to be focused, if you see those qualities, what happens is that people see you in it from a different perspective. You inspire them.
Well, this has been a really interesting chat, and if someone wants to get a hold of this book, they can pretty much find it anywhere, right?
They can purchase it in any bookstore. They can also purchase it on Amazon or Indigo online. Yes, it's available everywhere.
Maria, thanks so much for this.
Well, thank you very much, Tyler. It's been a pleasure.
Maria Gonzalez in Toronto. She's the author of the book Mindful Leadership, and you can get that book pretty much anywhere where books are sold. Again, she's also founder and president of something called Argonauta Strategic Alliances Consulting. There's a whole bunch more info on that website as well. Just Google Argonauta Strategic Alliances. It's just like Argo, like the Toronto Argos, and then Nauta, like Argonaut. And just throw that into Google there, and it'll pop up, and it's a really interesting time on that website, and the book sounds excellent. Go out and pick it up if it's something that you think would benefit you in your career. Time for a break. We're coming back.